Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
Today on Squawk Pod, Warren versus wealth. Again.
It is time for a wealth tax in America.
The campaign ad taking direct aim at billionaires.
It can run on CNN, MSNBC, Fox.
It's trolling.
And everywhere that could possibly exist.
But who is it targeting, really?
Echo chamber.
Chef and entrepreneur Lydia Bastianich.
It's a time for restaurants to take a look because the business is really changing.
On the international language of food. Those stories and more of the latest headlines. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Thursday, November 14th, 2019. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
The public hearings on the House impeachment inquiry kicked off yesterday. During the 5.5 hours of questioning, current top U.S. diplomat to Ukraine, Bill Taylor, revealed new information about President Trump's role in possibly pressuring Ukraine to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden.
A member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations.
Lawmakers are speculating that the impeachment inquiry could last weeks or maybe months. Makes for dramatic moments on Capitol Hill, right? But how does it impact the markets, still hovering near all-time highs?
Money. Joining us is Ed Mills. He's Washington policy analyst for Raymond James. And so far, it looks like the markets have been shrugging this off, right, Ed?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what you saw yesterday was, you know, very interesting testimony, but you had to spend 5.5 hours to really get into the meat of it. Right now, what the market is pricing in is that the House is more likely than not or near certain to pass articles of impeachment. It moves to the Senate, and the Senate is extremely unlikely, at least at this time, to remove the president from office. And so they are focused on getting through this earnings season, focused on the kind of economic reports that are coming out of the Fed, which generally are pretty good.
Is there a moment, you think, when the markets will sit up and pay more attention, or does it rely entirely on whether or not the Senate would act?
Yeah, I think what we'll be looking for kind of near term is this testimony next week by Ambassador Sondland. He is once again in the center of this, and now with this overheard phone call, he's already updated his testimony once. We'll see if he has to update his testimony a second time. The next thing the market will look at is how many, if any, Republicans side with Democrats in the passage of any impeachment, kind of articles of impeachment. And then there will be a speculation on, is that enough to really start breaking kind of the dam wall in the Senate? Certainly, senators like Mitt Romney seem to be more likely than not to possibly side on conviction. Other kind of more senior senators, someone like a Lamar Alexander, who is retiring, a senior statesman in the Senate, he's who I'd be watching in the Senate to see if there is any sort of problem for the president as it relates to kind of conviction and removal.
How do you think this impacts President Trump's reelection potential for next year? Because that might be something the market pays a little more attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good question. It is clear that for the most part, everyone in this country has put on their jerseys, has gone to their side. If you're for Trump, you're against impeachment. If you're against Trump, you're for impeachment. There is a small group in the middle, especially those who are in the suburbs. This is what we learned in last week's election. That's what we learned in the 2018 election, that Republicans and President Trump right now are fairly toxic in the suburbs. And so if impeachment doesn't result in removal, but continues to erode that support in the suburbs for President Trump, that could be a real warning sign for his reelection campaign, especially if those suburbs of Philadelphia, the suburbs in kind of Detroit or kind of Milwaukee, where those are the key three states, in my opinion, for this presidential election, continue to deteriorate for the president, there'll be much more speculation that he'd have a tough time, regardless of the outcome of this impeachment inquiry, for re-election in 2020.
Who's it going to be? Who's the Dem going to be? Buttigieg now? Who do you think, Ed? What, it's been moving his way.
Well, what I have been focused on more recently is that we are easily on our way towards the first contested convention since 1952.
Really? Hillary steps up.
I think that, too.
Hillary steps up.
I think that's Bloomberg's play, right? What he thinks is that if it's not going to be clean, if it gets messy, you just got to get there.
If Donald Trump ran under the Democrats' rules, he would have gotten to the convention in 2016 without a majority of the delegates. And so if you do have Bloomberg who steps in, if we have Deval Patrick who steps in, if it is a three or four kind of candidate race going into Super Tuesday, you know, Democrats, if you get 15% of the vote in any congressional district in this country, you too, Joe, could get a delegate. You should be in the running.
I don't know what I'd do with it once I got one.
Well, you would be in the conversation Milwaukee in July.
Now in the race.
What happened to Bloomberg with you? You're cutting him loose now like you did Howard Schultz once they
are
say that.
Are you kidding me?
So you still are a Bloomberg.
I think Bloomberg's terrific. Okay. You know I think Bloomberg's
well,
terrific.
Well, I can't believe you're throwing out Deval Patrick now. You're so fickle.
Deval Patrick just announced yesterday.
But you're so fickle. Now you like him?
Bye-bye.
Carl Icahn now pushing for the proposed merger between Xerox and Hewlett-Packard. Now, Icahn revealed late yesterday that he has built a 4.24% stake, I should say, in HP, valued at roughly $1.2 billion. He already owned more than 10% of Xerox. Now, Icahn told the Journal he started buying HP in February without any intention of doing a deal with Xerox. His comments are the first confirmation that Icahn is behind that deal. But I hope you all remember this. Squawk Box viewers were tipped off last Wednesday when research analyst Don Bilson joined us and told us he believed that Icahn was pulling the strings behind that deal.
We have reason to believe that he's also on the other side, which he's already at HP. Carl Icahn's 13Fs are notoriously poor for disclosure. They're watermarked with confidential status. For some reason, the SEC has allowed him to operate that way. So he has found a way to kind of game the system so he doesn't have to report. It's possible that Nomura reported for him.
And you may also remember that Bilson also sniffed out Warren Buffett's involvement in that Occidental Anadarko deal by tracking private planes.
Right.
And we talked a lot about looking for tail numbers.
He said at that point he
had
to come up with a different way to start tracking things.
Yeah.
Because people were hiding there.
We're talking about Blue Horseshoe and Sir Lawrence Wildman Anacott Steele and riding around. You ask him if he rode around on a Vespa following CEOs around, like Buddy Fox.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Mm-hmm. We did.
WeWork lost $1.25 billion during the third quarter, weighed down by growing expenses. That comes despite revenue nearly doubling compared to a year earlier. Last month, SoftBank Group increased its ownership in WeWork to nearly 80% in a $6.5 billion rescue package. Did you happen to see what Adam Neumann was, where he was looking at some property? Did you see that yesterday?
Yeah. Where?
Which one?
Somewhere on Park Avenue.
Another place he's going to buy?
For $45 million.
Well, he's got a new pay package.
Now.
Neumann.
I can't. Was that a cultural reference?
That was a cultural reference.
You're coming around.
I'm buying a $45 million penthouse in Park Avenue.
Why did I see that?
According to our good friends at the New York Post.
Because you were on a train for 8 hours.
Because it's the New York Post. I was on a train for 8 hours.
You read
exactly.
Everything yesterday.
I know this building. Oh, it's next to the church. It's a nice building, actually.
It should be for $45 million.
Yeah.
Is it near one of your units in that building?
No, it is not. I don't have any units. I'd like some units.
You know our 1%er problems, remember that?
Yeah.
Do you fix that? That echo in your foyer?
You're using my jokes.
Yeah. You're using mine, I'm using yours. It's nice. Anyway. It's because of this set, I think.
The set. And we get to, we're here with Becky. That's
so perfect that she's right there, isn't it?
Perfect.
They're going to ask us to move on. You know that. They're going to ask us to move along.
No more here. Tease next.
Next on Squawk Pod. Senator Elizabeth Warren doubles down against the wealthy, and it gets pretty meta.
I can make a list for her if she really wants.
Right.
The bad billion. Of the ones that the greedy bad billionaires? Who?
We'll be right back. This is Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Up and Andrew, cue.
Okay, let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. What do we say about that? I mean, let's talk about it.
Well, let's tell you the story.
Senator Elizabeth Warren is launching a new attack on billionaires, buying commercial time on our TV network, CNBC, to air a campaign ad.
It is time for a wealth tax in America. I've heard that there are some billionaires who don't support this plan.
The ad takes aim at a few familiar faces in the business community, like former Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein. But the spot's first target is hedge fund mogul Leon Cooperman. And the video used is from an appearance on CNBC.
The vilification of billionaires makes no sense to me. It's bull.
The graphics on screen over his comments read net worth, $3.2 billion, and in large block lettering, charged with insider trading. This is just the latest shot between Warren and Cooperman. He recently sent her an open letter claiming her treatment of him was like, quote, a parent chiding an ungrateful child.
These comments have kind of gotten spun off into the broader universe.
Into some kind of mythical unicorn. It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Couple things. First of all, this ad that they're buying on CNBC, I can't imagine they're actually buying the ad so that they can persuade the audience that she is the right person.
It's
they
not
are
the,
buying
it's
it on
trolling.
CNBC so that it can run on CNN, MSNBC, Fox,
it's trolling.
And everywhere that could possibly exist and get lots of coverage. We're covering it. It's being covered on all the other networks. And so that's that.
It's publicity.
Number two,
it's trolling, right?
They're taking, obviously, shots at Lee Cooperman, who's been on our air. They then take a shot of Lloyd Blankfein, who was at a CNN event recently, talking about, I mean, they sort of pop through the things. I'm surprised that they didn't take the Bill Gates video yet.
Well,
I mean,
do you know what she has done? I don't know if you saw it over the weekend. Her campaign site is now saying, it's got a kind of a snarky ad to bring people in on Twitter. It says, are you a billionaire? You answer yes or no. Do you want to see what the billionaire tax is doing?
Right.
It's the billionaire tax
and
calculator.
And they have a special link for
Bill link,
and for each
and
person.
And it's every single one of the rich guys who have said anything about it. Jamie's on the list. Bill's on the list. Jeff Bezos is on the list. Lee Cooperman's on the list. It's
look, the to me at least, like Lee Cooperman actually wants somewhat relatively progressive tax policies.
Right.
Bill Gates wants very progressive tax policies. So the whole thing to me,
Lloyd is so. I argue with him all the time. He's a total lefty, but 90% of the time, I mean, now they're eating their own.
She's trying to make sure that none of them will speak out against her. This is what happens.
I mean, this is involving us now. Somehow we're part of the story. So I don't really feel like. I would never talk about something that involved us, but I thought about it initially, and it was like, hey, if you want to reach billionaires, you advertise on CNBC. And then I thought, wait a minute, I don't know if I want those nasty people watching us. I don't want to take credit. So I don't know where to come down. You're not preaching to the choir.
But
you're not in
that class.
Right, she is.
She's
but she's not in an echo chamber. She
but
needs
she's
to go,
doing it because of the echo chamber.
Because she gets picked up.
She's
going
to get in the other echo chamber.
Exactly.
I understand.
We are talking about
but
it.
But I do think that the shots that she's taking, for the most part, against these individuals, for the particular people she's chosen. I mean, that's the thing. I could make a list for her if she really wants. But
right.
Of the greedy bad billionaires? Who?
She's chosen very carefully anybody who's kind of said that she.
Which billionaires? And which billionaires
are.
Are which ones are bad? Which ones don't give it away?
Irish.
Which ones are not
no.
philanthropic?
Look, we've had. Warren Buffett has a great line that he says,
Right, by I know, I know. I used that the other day.
Criticized by category, not by name.
Right.
Yeah.
We've had all sorts of guests who've come here and have argued in favor of the carried interest.
No, they do that for a reason, not just self-interest, some of them.
And a lot of them have philosophical views. All I'm saying
and
is...
And they have big... A lot of the guys that argue for carried...
But with self-interest and whatnot. I'm just saying...
No, I don't think it is self-interest.
You think there's no self-interest. But
I don't.
All
no.
I'm suggesting is...
Because they're giving it away anyway.
There are people
same
who
guys.
Are not on her political side who have argued for tax policies that are completely antithetical to what she thinks. And I'm shocked that she doesn't go after them. Instead, she goes after the people who actually probably are more closely aligned
with
her.
But these are people who might support another Democrat. Not people who would necessarily, in all cases, support
and the people that she's appealing to already agree with her on this. And they hate the billionaire too. And you know what? I have already taken my stand. These guys are on their own.
I'm not a billionaire. There's nothing in defending them for me. You're defending them more than I am now. They're on there. I got a billion. I don't have a billion. Tax them. I tax them at 95%, bastards.
That's the way most
really.
People.
Should we be happy that if you want to reach them, you reach them through CNBC?
I think you should.
That's bad, too.
No, not about that.
I just don't think that's even part of the calculus.
Because she thinks she just wants to be written up somewhere else. It's not the actual ads.
100%.
We talked about it. Okay, water quotes.
By the way, find out how many ads she actually purchased and then call me.
Do you think it's one?
I have to do that?
No, my point is... No,
I don't even have your phone number.
I don't believe that she's running these 24
Can I text you?
24 hours a day. I don't. No.
Can I email you? I don't have your phone number.
You do.
I know. I do. I'm kidding. Not many people do.
All right. Before you give it away, let me take over here. Joining us right now to talk about it is Joel Griffith. He's research fellow for the Heritage Foundation's Institute for Economic Freedom and Opportunity. And Jared Bernstein, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities senior fellow, also a CNBC contributor. Jared, what do you think? You have advised Democrats. Is this a smart play?
Lee, if you're listening, don't go on TV today. Look, I hate to create a hole in your 12 o'clock spot, but you know, the baseball players have a saying, a boo on the road is a cheer at home. As far as Elizabeth Warren's political brand and her campaign are concerned, these billionaires are doing her a great favor by inveighing against her wealth tax. Now, we can have very good arguments about whether her wealth tax is the right way to go after wealth. But the fact that wealth is more concentrated than it's ever been, this is a huge issue for Democrats. And the idea that so much wealth escapes taxation, especially unrealized gains, is at the heart of a really important public finance debate that she's helped to start. So I think she's done us a great service. And I think these billionaires are their own worst enemies right now.
If it's helping her, why are you against Lee Cooperman coming on then? You're against her?
Well, I'm just saying that, like, if those billionaires want to give me a tiny chunk of their wealth, I will give them some excellent media advice.
You should want Lee Cooperman to come on.
It's a fair
because
point.
It helps Elizabeth Warren. Unless you don't want to help Elizabeth Warren,
I'm just
because
saying
you want
that
to help
I don't.
Joe Biden.
Look, I'm being honest. I don't understand the logic. These folks are
Wait
their worst offenders.
You're being honest?
I'm always honest.
Oh, okay. Well, then you don't need to say it.
Joel, he brings up a good point. This is red meat to a lot of Elizabeth Warren supporters.
Well, Jared is arguing we should be having a discussion about the right way to go after this wealth. I would say that we should be discussing whether or not we should be going after this wealth at all, because what we know is that this capital that investors have been able to accumulate, it's not as if they're holding this in bank vaults under their mattresses. This is the capital that's being invested in research, being invested in development. It's being invested in new and existing business opportunities. If we begin taking that wealth, then the economic studies show that over a longer period of time, this would wipe out in excess of 70% of the wealth of some of these investors. This means negative economic results for all of us, not just on the wealthy.
Joel, I want to stop you because there's an issue here, which is that folks like yourself, and I don't project onto you, but I'd say the Heritage and others, for a very, very long time have pushed back, frankly, on any, not wealth tax, but on any additional taxes at all. And in fact, I would argue that it's the result of that pushback on what I consider the low-hanging fruit on a system that doesn't work, that's led to maybe, and we can describe it as an overshoot if you'd like, the pendulum maybe has swung now too far to the point where conversation is meaningfully happening in this country around a wealth tax. But I would argue to you that the reason this conversation about a wealth tax is even happening is because the easy stuff, the stuff that seems so unfair to the average American, has been allowed to persist as long as it has. How do you think about that?
I think I understand where you're coming from, but the fact is a lot of these proposals have worked. If we've looked at how we've had the top income tax rate has been brought down from where it was in the 1970s, we've seen the gain on capital, we've seen the income tax and capital gains, we've seen that come down substantially. And I would argue we've seen positive economic results from that. We have median household income at an all-time record high. And if you compare our average family to Germany, for instance, which is a very prosperous country, our disposable income per family in this country is $11,000 higher than Germany, for instance. And that is a gap that has widened.
How would you answer the question about the inequality gap, which has only risen?
I think that our focus should not be on the difference in equality of wealth or income. The focus should be on the gap in equality of opportunity.
Let me get in here. So first of all, pretty much every Democrat running for office strongly disagrees that inequality should be off the table. And I understand why you'd want to go there. But I think more fundamentally, Joel is really telling the old supply side trickle down story. And that's just been disproved time and time again. And Exhibit A right now is the Trump tax cuts, which were billed, a very significant cut in the corporate rate, which were billed as an investment charger. And business investment has been an extreme soft spot. It's actually been a negative in the past two quarters.
That he just floated this week, and Larry Kudlow talked about too, to offer tax cuts to the middle class if they come up with tax cut 2.0.
You know, I don't think it's a good idea, to tell you the truth. And the reason is that we have a big revenue problem in this country. And we don't talk about this enough because we're so focused on the high-level fights between the candidates and the billionaires. Mm-hmm. The motivation for these policies that Warren and Sanders and Biden and, frankly, all of them are talking about is to raise the revenues to support meeting the challenges.
It's not to cancel out the deficit, though. They are talking about not big canceling out the deficit. Additional spending.
It's a fair point and a good point. And I actually
Jared, I'm going to push back on you, which is to say the thing that I don't understand about this for the life of me is if you're going to push a wealth tax, it's not being advertised as a revenue generator. It's just not. That's not the ad.
Oh, no, that's
wrong. That's not the ad that Elizabeth Warren is taking out. That's not the ad that Bernie Sanders is taking out. I actually don't know why they don't call it the wealth insurance program, which is to say we're going to tax you to effectively protect your wealth.
When she first introduced her wealth tax, she talked about raising over $2 trillion over 10 years. The reason I remember that is because there was a lot of scuffling and fighting about whether that was a realistic number, and we can have that discussion. So initially, there was a revenue focus. I think what's happened is she's found this political opening because of the kinds of arguments that this ad is generating and all the debates that we had, and that's a political winner for her, as I said. But initially, the idea here, and it's still all over her materials, is to raise pay for her programs. And I agree with Becky, that doesn't take down the deficit that we have, but theoretically it doesn't add to it.
Hey, Joel, you need to push back on this narrative that I hear. When someone from the left just says, you know what, the jury is in, trickle down and supply side growth does not work. That's such crap. That's a load of crap, Jared, that it's been proven that it doesn't work.
If I can interject here, it's not empirical. It's ludicrous.
If you grow the pie, you have more to split up. If all you do is split it up, a smaller pie, it doesn't help anyone. Go ahead, Joel.
Look, we have statistics on this, thankfully. And this is government data. And I'm sorry, Jared, the numbers aren't on your side on this.
Median
household income is at an all-time record high, second all-time record high that we've had.
Unemployment.
Second of all, not the second all-time greatest high that we've ever had. It is.
Median family income has hit record highs about 30 times.
I'm not going to be able to let you finish your thoughts because we are out of time on this.
Coming up, La Dolce Vita in the kitchen. Chef and entrepreneur Lydia Bastianich.
It's very important that I'm truthful to my guests, to my customers, in the sense of quality.
Squawk Pod. We'll be right back.
Let's take out the bay leaves. Let's fish out the mussels. Tutti a tavola a mangiare.
Everyone to the table to eat. It's Italian food guru Lydia Bastianich's catchphrase. She's authored over a dozen cookbooks, hosts a public television show called Lydia's Kitchen, and owns and operates several restaurants you may have heard of, popular places like Becco and Del Posto in New York, and Italian marketplace Eataly, which has several delicious locations around the country. But her first restaurant, Felidia, is the inspiration for her newest book. Lydia joined Squawk Box to discuss the restaurant industry, her food products, and whether you should eat out or dine in for Thanksgiving.
Okay, folks, we're now just 2 weeks away from Thanksgiving, and according to the National Restaurant Association, home for the holidays doesn't always mean dining in. This, according to some latest data, nearly 10% of surveyed plan to go out to eat on Thanksgiving. I don't do this on Thanksgiving. I eat with the family in the house. Two-thirds of shoppers out on Thanksgiving Day and Black Friday will dine out. Now, for more on all of this, I want to welcome our special guest, Lydia Bastianich is here, chief restaurateur, award-winning television host. Bastianich runs a food empire with her children, Tanya and Joseph. Joseph's been on the show before. I don't know, has Tanya been with us on the show? I don't know. There's a new book out, Lydia, Recipes from My Flagship Restaurant. Lydia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Andrew. Pleasure being here. Buongiorno a tutti.
What do you make of people eating out on Thanksgiving? How do you feel about that?
I'm kind of split. Yeah. I have restaurants. I love that. They fill them up. They come. And it's really challenging and wonderful to feel that you're part of a special day or a special family day. Big families come all the time. Right. And I love that. And on the other hand...
But you want people cooking in their home, right?
Yeah, but
there's plenty of people out there.
Yeah, there's plenty of people.
Where can we get all this at Eataly, right?
You can get it at Eataly. You can get it at all major stores, ShopRite, whatever the stores. It's in the stores. It's on the web. It's whatever. The wine as well as the pasta and sauces.
I'm curious though. Do you have a favorite distributor? Meaning, are there retailers that you like more than others? You just like all retailers.
That
sell your stuff.
Yeah, from the point of view of having a line, but I am cautious and I do visit. We do visit. My son-in-law is involved. Yeah. We do visit the stores regularly to make sure that it is rotated, that the dates are correct. You know, because once you send out your product, you don't know how it's managed out there.
Does everybody sell it at the same price?
No. Each one, and so you control that as well.
You're like the first Bush. Yeah, when's the last time you were in a place? You know, they have scanners now. That
no,
where you
I
go.
Just, no, when I say do they all sell at the same price, you could go
no,
to,
I know,
to
but,
Wall,
but
to
you
the
said,
shop, right?
Have you been to shop? Eataly. When's the last time you were in a shop?
Eataly, by the way, I assume
where
is
do you send
margin.
Your people? Which supermarket do you send
oh,
your people
stop
to?
Stop it. I was just you, in the
King's
supermarket.
Kings has it. Kings has a great... And I guarantee you, I pay less? I pay a lot more in Kings than I do at Shop.
So to get back to the prices...
Yeah.
We do, you know, you do promotion with the stores.
Right.
You give them at a discount to them. Hopefully they'll pass on the discount to the customers.
Right.
And that's the thing.
But
that
how
we
much
have
is that
check.
About getting shelf space?
Shelf space is like paying rent. You were talking about some rent before
I came in.
It's paying rent and it's high. The rent in the stores, placing your products, it's pretty high.
Okay, what about web and direct to consumer right now?
Well, that's, of course, the growing
market. That's the holy
grail
for you.
It's a whole new, we love it. We're on it. Amazon, we're on it.
You are, you like Amazon. Because some people have misgivings about being on Amazon.
Well, you see, this is a product that I can control. So for me, it's very important that I'm truthful to my guests, to my customers, in the sense of quality. And what I put out there reflects my philosophy of good food at the right price for the people. So that's important to me very much. And we control that to some extent. It's packaged. It's all that. We put it out there. Now, how they sell it out there, I hope that they do justice, that they deliver it on time, that it's packaged properly so it doesn't break, and so on.
But what's the Amazon worry always is that would you like to have a more direct-to-consumer relationship with the customer? But that also costs sometimes more because you have to acquire that customer in a different way.
It does. You're absolutely right. You know, and you can deny the exposure of a company such as Amazon, certainly.
Right.
But, you know, I do appreciate very much that direct contact with the customer. Mm-hmm. And that's partly, I think, my longevity in the business, because I think earning the respect of your guest and your customers, they will keep on buying and coming back.
Lydia, what do you see in the restaurants right now? What does it tell you about the American consumer, their willingness to spend?
It's changing. It's a time for restaurants really to take a look, restaurateurs and business, because the business is really changing. It's changing with the millennials and really wanting great product, but wanting value. They are not as interested in service and in kind of fancy tablecloths. Mm-hmm. They want it delivered. They want it on time. They want it good.
They want it delivered, not even in the restaurant necessarily.
Well, delivered, I mean...
Oh, to the table.
But both ways. You know, both ways. The delivery element is really
Who
taking off.
Who do you use for your delivery? Do you use Uber Eats?
We haven't really delved into
that,
it there because I'm very concerned about the quality that ultimately will be delivered. Mm-hmm. And plus, money-wise, these companies take a big chunk. They take 30% off, the price that... How do they do? They take it from me, and they increase the price. So my visibility out there to the customer may be, it's not worth it, it's too expensive, and whatever.
And it shows up cold.
But we started our business in the restaurants. And that's where our core business is and the communication.
Right. What are you doing to address these changes that you see in the population's taste for restaurants at this point?
Well, as a restaurateur, you have to be very cautious and attentive, and you have to be within the move. You have to sort of be almost ahead. And as chefs, we do set the pace, if you will. We do kind of innovate going ahead. What is the quality of the food? So in each restaurant, for example, the longevity of Felidia, whose book we have here, is 38 years. And that's almost unheard in the restaurant industry. So, you know, you might ask why. Why? And again, going back to that, first of all, the Italian way of life, the Italian food is honest, it's seasonal. Right. It really tastes good and nurtures you, so that's important to keep.
Tips. I just want to know about tipping. What do you think? What do you, I do.
Andrew wants to know how little he can get.
But the whole, it feels like tipping is changing because there's so many restaurants now that aren't accepting tips.
You had this all worked out. You do the Elizabeth Warren tip. You do 2%. Don't you?
No.
That's what.
And by the way, there are now new services.
You don't do the wealth tax tip.
Do you know about Resy, which was just bought by American Express? And there's all these other services. In the future, a lot of people are just going to walk into the restaurant, sit down, order the food, and walk out
without paying, just like with the
And
Amazon
the tip
stores.
Will be added.
A lot of
directly
places they have 20% just
included.
Right.
Yeah, it's between 15% and 20%.
Yes,
20%. And if you're very, very generous, you over.
Right.
You know, my philosophy.
Elizabeth Warren tip. That's your.
Well, I don't know. 2% won't do.
2%
Next time you come in the restaurant, the customer, and you know, the servers, because they deserve, they work very hard.
All right. Lydia, it is great to see you. We're thrilled to see you. Happy Thanksgiving, 2 weeks in advance.
Thank you, the same to you.
I'm going to do a red sauce for my Thanksgiving. Is the book. Yep.
For Lydia, we have a dinner for Thanksgiving, so it is the book. You can come.
It's the book. We can come for, maybe I should take the whole family.
You should. You
I'm
really
going to call
should,
you.
Because we have,
I now know somebody.
We have a delicious,
I can get a reservation, maybe.
Delicious. And you know,
to the table
Turkey.
The waiter.
Turkey is not so Italian.
That's the show for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen. If you like what you hear, leave us a rating or review, or tweet us at Squawk CNBC. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Clear. Thanks, guys.